With Marcy Silman, I'm Ross Reynolds. You're listening to KUOW's The Record. This hour, we've been talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. It's a giant international trade agreement. We've heard it called the largest and most complicated ever. But it's not unusual that you would not have heard of it. Most of the negotiations have been going on for several years in secret. Here's what we do know. The agreement would govern about 40% of U.S. imports and exports. It includes 11 nations around the Pacific Rim, with the notable exception of China. If it doesn't touch your job, it probably affects the job of someone you know, particularly here in trade-dependent Washington State. Joining us next is Eric Schinfeld, who's been watching how the Trans-Pacific Partnership could affect us here in Washington State. He is the president of the Washington Council on International Trade. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
So how could the TPP affect us here?
Well, as you said, you know, Washington is the most trade-dependent state in the United States. Actually, about 40% of all the jobs in Washington State are tied to international trade in one way or another. And specifically in terms of the Asia-Pacific region, where this trade agreement is really focused, about two-thirds of our state's exports go to countries in the Asia-Pacific region, and somewhere in the range of 80 to 90% of our state's imports.
A lot of that trade is with China, which is conspicuously absent from this agreement. Why is that?
Well, you know, there's a really interesting quote from one of the president's former advisors, who's actually now the head of the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, Michael Froman. And Michael Froman said that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is not something that one is invited to, it's something that one aspires to. And what he means by that is we're creating what could be a really high-standard 21st century agreement, and only the countries are involved that are really willing to step up and say, we're willing to raise our standards to participate in global trade in this way.
Raise their standards how?
All sorts of ways, everything from environmental and labor standards to things around intellectual property protection, things around market access, and generally just being a better trading partner and respecting the rules more.
Give us a couple of examples. For example, in the realm of labor, why would it require members of the Trans-Pacific Partnership to raise their standards?
Well, as you probably know, a lot of global trade rules actually have to do with how countries operate themselves. And here in the United States, we have very high standards for what we require in terms of labor safety, labor protections, labor wages. And when we sign trade agreements, there's always an opportunity for us to say, if you as a different country want to trade with us, you need to live up to standards that are at the very least closer to ours. And so, for example, when you saw our last trade agreements with Korea and Colombia and Panama, there was a labor chapter that said you can only sign this agreement if you're willing to raise your labor standards.
I can remember traveling in Malaysia and seeing stores where you could buy Microsoft software for amazingly cheap prices. I think it was some knockoffs that were just being sold. You mentioned intellectual property as part of this agreement. How would it change the rules on intellectual property in the nations that are part of it?
Absolutely, and you're so right. Intellectual property is so key to our state's economy, and not just in software and technology, but also in manufacturing, in retail and apparel, and even in an agricultural sector. And right now, what we see in places around the world, and particularly places in Asia, is that even if they have rules in intellectual property, they're not being enforced. And so this would really lay out, again, if you want to be a trading partner of the United States and you want more access to our markets, you need to respect our intellectual property, and you need to protect our intellectual property.
Are there any downsides to Washington State in the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
When we look at the competitive global economy, we know that we have to make sure that we're as competitive as possible. And any time that you're looking at new markets and trying to gain access to new markets, there's always an opportunity for those countries to increase their access to yours. But if we continue to invest in education and infrastructure and continue to have the best products and services in the world, which we make here in Washington State, then we should be able to create sustainable, well-paying jobs for all of our state's residents.
Which markets or businesses here in Washington State might be vulnerable?
You know, I think that all of the industries in our state have the opportunity to grow, and all of them are vulnerable now. All of them need to make sure that they are staying competitive, that their products and services are of the highest quality, that they're competitively priced, that they're marketed effectively, and that they're leveraging supply chains to really get those products to and from market as best as possible.
But it sounded like you were saying it might make this even more competitive because it will allow foreign companies to come into our markets and maybe compete on a more favorable basis. Like which areas, which sectors of our economy in Washington State would that affect?
Sure. And what I would also say is that it will make our companies more competitive in those countries
sure.
as well. It will lower market barriers. It will increase opportunities.
Right.
And so that's true. Both sides are true for all of the industries in our state.
Right. But what industries in our state might have some concern about our side of the equation?
you know, all of the employers, and of course my organization is supported by employers from across the state in all industries, and everyone I've talked to is really excited about the potential. And again, it is still very much a potential. We don't know yet what's going to be the final product in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but everyone I've talked to in the business community, other employers across the state, feel like if this goes well, that they all will have an opportunity to be more successful.
Eric, we have a lot of international trade agreements. We've got NAFTA and the WTO. Why do we need another one?
You know, the WTO hasn't really been updated in a significant way in decades. And in those decades, the global economy has changed, has gotten more complicated. And so areas like intellectual property protection, the rise of state-owned enterprises in places like Asia, are not covered and are not protected by things, by trade agreements that were signed decades ago. And so we need to update them. Unfortunately, the WTO doesn't have the capacity or the ability right now to update those agreements. And so we've been forced to do these in bilateral and regional trade agreement ways.
Eric Schinfeld is president of the Washington Council on International Trade. Thanks for speaking with us, Eric.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If you haven't heard about it yet, you're going to be hearing more about it.
Right now, in fact, Stan Sorcher has been watching what the TPP could mean for Washington. And unlike Eric, he's not so happy. Stan represents aerospace workers at the Society for Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace, SPEEA. Stan, why do you think the Trans-Pacific Partnership is bad news for Washington?
Well, first, I always like to say that SPEEA is a labor union representing engineers, scientists, technicians in the aerospace industry. We're 100% in favor of trade. We make products the rest of the world wants to buy. We understand the potential for prosperity that trade brings. If you look at the history of these trade agreements, a lot of the aspirations that Eric was talking about simply haven't come true. And what you do see in the trade agreements is a great deal of leverage given to producers, investors, manufacturers. They are the ones who do very well in these trade agreements. The trade agreements speak to their interests. And you see very little attention or enforceable language given to workers or communities, the environment, public health, things that affect communities.
You heard Ross ask Eric Schinfeld several times which specific industries will benefit and which will be hurt. You're in the aerospace industry. How might TPP affect you?
Well, our members are very sensitive to this question of offshoring, and I think everybody in Washington State has kind of been hypersensitized to that issue lately with the machinists issue. But decades now, we've seen a lot of work packages go out into the global supplier network. Every industry has experienced this. Aerospace perhaps is the last one to really suffer from this. But our members are very sensitive to this question about offshoring and their jobs being shipped overseas. In our case, you know, we also see it as affecting the performance of our product, something that we're really devoted to. But if you look at other industries as an example of what could happen to us, we're certainly aware of what happened to the textile industry and semiconductor manufacturing, home electronics. A lot of industry in America has moved to low-wage countries, and we see that as potentially our situation as well.
I'm talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, with Stan Sorcher, who is part of SPEEA, the Society for Professional – you want to say the whole name again? Engineering Employees in Aerospace. I always call it SPEEA. One of the intents of TPP is to create trade opportunity. You mentioned right off the bat that Boeing, the aerospace industry, is highly dependent on international trade. Increased trade would be good, wouldn't it?
Sure. It's how do you do it? I mean, I'm in favor of banks, but we have a lot of conversation about banking policy. I'm in favor of education and transportation and healthcare. Let's talk about that. So trade particularly has the potential to be very disruptive, and you can see winners and losers. And our concern about the history of these trade agreements is that the winners here are doing very, very well, and the ones not doing so well are communities, the environment, workers and families.
You're basing that on NAFTA, on what you've seen, the
fallout model,
from
right.
NAFTA. Some people call this particular trade pact NAFTA on steroids.
Right. So what are the defining characteristics of NAFTA, right? They give exceptional brand new rights to global manufacturers, they discount the importance of a public good. It's all about trade first, maximum trade, and any interest of public good or civil society is discounted and put second. So if you look at Canada wants to the province of Quebec wants to regulate fracking because the drilling would be going under the St. Lawrence Seaway. Well, this seems like a reasonable, legitimate thing to do. But the interests of the drillers, the oil companies in Canada is placed above that public interest, and Quebec could be sanctioned by the trade tribunal. So that kind of mechanism in NAFTA is carried through in all the other trade agreements. It really gives a lot of leverage to global businesses and takes the correspondingly lower leverage for civil society.
We don't have a timeline for when TPP might finally be approved and ratified by all the nations. It's been under negotiation for 3 years now. But say it is signed 50 years now, what do you think that will mean for Washington State?
Well, that's one of the taglines that goes with this, that global businesses see these agreements as defining the way life is organized in 2050. And it'll be organized around their interests. They'll be very pleased with the way life is organized. I've seen that movie, right? It's not very pleasant. I would much prefer to hand over to my children and my grandchildren a society that has a balance of power, balance of interest, and recognizes public good along with the prosperity for global businesses.
And you don't think that they'll see that under the TPP?
No. Look at the language that was released yesterday by WikiLeaks about the environment. The environment is given lip service and no enforceable conditions. And the opposite is true for the global businesses.
Stan Sorcher represents aerospace workers with SPIA. Thank you so much for coming in. We're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, on the record on KUOW.